You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. I've hosted 900 plus shows over the last 19 years. Each week I chat with a Christian leader or expert on leadership themes. The aim is to learn more, dig down into how we can lead better as Christians where God has placed us, in church or charity, commercial or non-commercial settings. So I hope you find this conversation helpful and will want to join us again. You can simply subscribe by signing up where you receive your podcasts. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity Magazine, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. From time to time, we like to dip into the archive and broadcast shows that still resonate today. And this week, we have a show from 2019 with Bishop Emma Einson. She was then the Bishop of Penrith, but has since moved south and is now Bishop of Kensington, the area bishop for the west of London. The show focuses upon a book that had just been published, which she's written, entitled Ambition: What Jesus Said About Power, Success, and Counting Stuff. I hope you enjoy it. Well, Christian leadership has an uneasy relationship with some of the principles espoused by leadership textbooks. Yes, we want to learn all we can to help us lead well, but we also want to be careful we don't take our eyes off Jesus, the servant leader. And these themes and many more are investigated in a new book called Ambition, What Jesus Said About Power, Success, and Counting Stuff. And the author is the Reverend Dr. Emma Einson, the Bishop of Penrith and former principal of Trinity College, Bristol, the Anglican Training College. So welcome, Emma, to the Leadership File.
Hi, Andy. Well, good to be with you.
And congratulations on the book. It's an intriguing title for anyone who's involved in leadership. I came across it as a kind of forthcoming title from SPCK. And I appreciate that despite you being especially involved in church leadership in your present and past roles, you say at the start it's for all Christian leaders, not just those leading churches.
Yes, I mean, I really hope that the book will be helpful to Christians leading in whatever sphere, really. I mean, I think some of the issues that it looks at, which are particularly around how we grow, how we count growth, how we track growth, how we compare ourselves with others for good or ill, what we do with ambition and success. Those are issues that I think impact church leaders, obviously, but also if you're a teacher or you're a doctor, you're leading in healthcare, education, in the arts. You know, these are things that affect all of us in our everyday leadership. So I guess I wanted to write it particularly for younger leaders, you know, those who are kind of setting out on their leadership adventure, but also for those who've been around the block a bit and just need a bit of refreshment, perhaps a new sense of purpose, of vision for the role. So it's definitely for Christian leaders because it very much focuses on Jesus and trying to lead in his ways. But I hope it might be really relevant across a wide sphere.
Sure. And you mentioned the two moments that prompted the writing of the book, and it might be useful to start there. The first was when the church your husband serves as vicar was designated a resource church.
Yes,
and the second was your own appointment to be the suffragan bishop of Penrith.
Yes.
And you say in the book that when you talk about ambition and success in a Christian context, it can feel like swearing. Give me some idea of the flavour of your thinking at that point.
Yeah, well, I think it was really crystallising some things that I've been thinking about for a while, really, is that we don't tend to talk about success, really, as Christians. As you say, it can sound a bit like swearing when we say words like that, and probably rightly so, because, you know, I don't think Jesus used the word success very much. It's not a very biblical concept, really, in that way. I mean, how do we talk about the cross, for instance? Was that successful or not? But I reckon that there are many leaders who want to do a really good job at what they do, and they want to make a difference for Jesus, and they want to use that kind of inner sense of drive and ambition, if you like, for him. And so, being married to a vicar myself, being appointed as a bishop fairly recently, and having been involved with training and supporting church leaders for many years, I just really wanted to take the lid off some of this stuff and to look it full in the face and to say, well, how do we do this well? You know, how do we use these God-given gifts in a way that is right and in line with what Jesus would say. So, yeah, there were some personal things kind of happening in my life and my family that started it all off, but I hope they might be helpful things for others as well.
Yeah. So as we kind of go through, I just saw a few areas that that struck me as I was reading the book. A few just kind of intriguing things as well. I was intrigued the origin of the word success.
Yes. Yeah, really interesting, actually. Both success. I was a linguist by background before I was a vicar and a bishop. So I'm really interested in language and words and kind of how we use them. And success comes from the Latin successus. And it simply means that which follows after. So something comes first and then something else in succession. And it's only, I think, recently that we've kind of put values on that and we either see it negatively or positively. The same with ambition, actually. Ambition comes from the word to walk, ambulare in Latin. It literally just means walking forward and moving forward. Actually, it was only that was quite a neutral word in our language until Shakespeare came along and made it a bit more negative. So, you know, Lady Macbeth trying to kill the king is called ambitious. And I think ever since then, we've kind of tended to see that word slightly more negatively than we might. So I guess what I'm trying to do is to think, well, can we redeem these concepts? And rather than being a bit out of bounds for Christians, can we examine them and think, well, how do we think in a godly way about them?
And I love the way you went back to the beginning and to the mandate that God gave Adam and Eve, and, you know, reminded us that ambition has a good element to it, that humankind was to have a appropriate ambition in spreading God's love and goodness.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, God's command to Adam and Eve to fill the earth and subdue it, that to me sounds like quite an ambitious task.
You know,
it's quite a big thing to be given. And of course, we know that Adam and Eve got that badly wrong, and they took ambition and used it for their own ends. They saw the forbidden fruit and they thought, well, we'll have a bit of that, you know, and they kind of, ever since then, I think ambition, which could be a godly thing, human beings, we've tended to take it and use it for wrong reasons. So I'm really hoping that we can redeem that word. I mean, Augustine, for instance, he talks about our souls being restless, and that kind of restlessness, that desire that only finds its fulfillment in God, can be used to do really good things for God on the earth. But we need to think rightly about them and put everything at the foot of the cross, really.
And you look specifically at the word leadership in the Bible, I love what you said, because the little work I'd done on the topic kind of confirmed the sort of things you were saying, the word leadership is rarely kind of used as such. Obviously, there's lots of leading going on, but clearly the New Testament authors are keen to distance their leadership from that of some leadership in the Roman world.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Jesus talks about leadership. I agree with you that it's not there as a word, but it's very much there as a concept. And Jesus actually talks to his own disciples about it and says, you know, you might see other leaders lording it over those that they lead, but it's not so with you. You know, you shouldn't do it like that. You should do it differently. So I guess my book is trying to unpack, what does a not so with you type of leadership look like, you know, in the church, in the workplace? And it's bound to be a leadership that's based on some of the values that Jesus talks about. So it'll be based on compassion and humility and wanting to see the other person flourish. In fact, I've got a whole chapter on the Beatitudes, you know, where Jesus describes who is blessed in the kingdom. And I just call that chapter Key Spiritual Dispositions for Ambitious People. It's kind of, you know, if we're going to lead in the way that Jesus wants us to, might those descriptions in the Beatitudes be a good place to start?
Yeah, no, sure. And you write of the importance of failing from time to time, potentially, you know, perhaps that we, you know, we get into the idea that we've got to be, quote, successful, and we don't try things because of the fear of failure.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favourite sections of the book, actually, what I call the success of failure, which is all about, as you say, how do we learn from the mistakes we make? And I particularly point to the example, I don't know if you spotted this, of Gareth Southgate, who was the England football manager.
No, I appreciated the footballing reference.
I'm not a huge football fan myself, but I am forced to watch it with my husband and son sometimes.
Sure. So,
but Gareth Southgate, you know, failed really badly in 1996. He missed a crucial penalty. But then he used that failure to help spur his ambitions for the 2018 World Cup team. So he kind of took the failure and redeemed it. And I think it's important that we do think about, well, what kind of failure are we talking about? Because there are different kinds and not all kinds are good. You know, some failures cause great harm to others. And I'm not saying, you know, just go ahead and fail because that's fine. But I think it's a matter of failing successfully. So failing at the right time for the right reasons and learning from that. I mean, the cross, as I said, it kind of stands at the centre of our faith and reminds us that God is in the business of redeeming failure and bringing something good out of it.
Yeah, yeah. And having the courage as leaders to try stuff that we're not sure quite what might happen is part of the adventure of leading.
That's right. And you know, we can never get everything right all of the time. And so that's why we do need to try things. We need to risk. We need to fail. I mean, as I say, it's about risking and failing well and not causing undue harm to others. But I think certainly, you know, if we're staying accountable to others, if we're talking things through, if we're looking through the lenses of faith, then failure can be a good thing and can be redeemed. And as you say, isn't something to be afraid of.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Emma Einson. She's the Bishop of Penrith. And we're talking particularly about her book, Ambition, What Jesus Said About Power, Success and Counting Stuff. And we'll continue that after this. Welcome back to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by the Reverend Dr. Emma Einson. She's the Bishop of Penrith. She's a former principal of Trinity College Bristol, the Anglican Training College, and is the author of a new book, Ambition, What Jesus Said About Power, Success and Counting Stuff. And obviously that book and the title interested me as the host of the Leadership File, because it's so much of leadership connects with those kind of themes. And certainly as Christians and Christians in leadership, we can perhaps struggle with them. So this book, which I've had the delight of reading, seeks to help and shed light on these kind of themes. And so that, I love that little phrase at the end of the title, Emma, counting stuff.
Yeah, because slightly naughty, really.
Well, it is, but it was lovely. And because that connects a little bit with your something of your husband, what your husband was finding as a vicar sometimes, and some of the trends perhaps in the Anglican Church of appropriately needing to account for resources and money and people, etc. But it's a kind of a kind of poisoned area of looking at life and things. So good examples and bad examples in Scripture that you look at in the book.
Yeah, I think it's important to say that the book doesn't say that counting things is bad. And in fact, I think we really do need to count things. And we do need to talk about numerical church growth. You know, I'm not one of these people who says, oh, the numbers don't matter, because I think they do. We need to see people coming to know Jesus one by one by one. You know, and we need to count those. But you're right. I mean, the Bible's quite obsessed with counting, actually. You know, there's loads of stuff on counting and numbers. There's even a whole book called Numbers in the Old Testament, you know. And it's really interesting. If you look at, there are different motivations for counting things. So, for example, in 2 Samuel, God gives David a right good telling off because he counts his armies. And that's because he doesn't trust God and he kind of wants to do it in his own strength and he wants to know how many resources he's got. But then in other places, God actually orders that people are counted. He asks people to take a census. And really interesting, I mean, back to the thought about words, the Hebrew word when God asks people to count people is the same word as to lift your head. So when God counts people, he lifts people's heads because he loves them and he wants to see them. So for God, people are more than just numbers, you know, they're individuals. And yet we do need to know how many we've got of various peoples or money or categories. So I guess it's about counting for the right reasons. And in the book, if you read the book, I've got four bad reasons for counting things and four good reasons for counting things. And you'll have to buy the book and read it to see what those are.
No, absolutely. And but as I think a number of people know the kind of the time that David was counting and God was upset, and the kind of consequences for the loss of life was quite extreme. And so other people are all very nervous about doing any counting. So it was handy to realise that, of course, there's plenty of good counting that goes on. And us knowing who's you know, part of our church, who's joined membership, who's become a Christian, is totally appropriate and to be commended.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as it's lifting people's heads.
Yes.
As long as we really see people as individuals, then, yeah, counting can be very important.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a lot of comparison that goes on in the Christian world.
There is.
I mean, no doubt media outlets such as Premier can unwittingly promote the less helpful elements of that because, of course, you know, the media often focuses upon the, you know, the what seems to be the glossy and the successful, et cetera, and folk listening can think, crumbs, I'm not doing terribly well. And I'm wondering if, as in your, you know, your early years or, you know, early time as Bishop of Penrith, you know, within your diocese, you're clearly meeting with some who are where things are flourishing and perhaps other things where things are perhaps numerically less positive. So when can comparison be good and when not? And how are you chatting with clergy about these kind of themes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the tendency to compare ourselves with others is something that all leaders face, probably all people face, but certainly all leaders face, and certainly clergy and Christian ministers. And, you know, I'm ministering in rural Cumbria, you know, right up in the northwest, and it's hard work. We have a lot of very small churches, small and faithful churches, and there can be the tendency to kind of, you know, look over the borders and see some big, shiny things that are going on. But actually, as you say, it is about counting and comparing for the right reasons. And I love that, you know, radio stations like your own feature really good news stories. I think it's really good to look at what others are doing and to say, wow, that's great. You know, God's doing a really important thing there, to celebrate the ministry of others. But it is so easy, isn't it, just to look at others and to feel negative about ourselves. And I think that's the thing that I'm trying to address in the book. You know, how do we live well with that? So John Wimber used to talk about the importance of living for an audience of one, Jesus. And I love that. That's something I've really tried to develop in my own life. How do I make sure that I'm living for Jesus as the audience of one, and not comparing myself negatively with others? But that's not an easy journey. And that's part of why I wanted to write the book, really, to help other Christian leaders to think about that.
Sure. And yeah, clearly the role of a bishop can be challenging in terms of how, you know, what when people try to evaluate what you're doing, you know, there's a sense in which, you know, you might feel that, you know, maybe you could do more, maybe you could do less, because you're having to make choices every day. I mean, I remember listening to Tom Wright, the Bishop of Durham, and how difficult, you know, looking back on his time, he's thinking, crumbs, you know, Did I do the right thing? Sometimes I, you know, got involved in things that maybe weren't as important as others, and that's a daily challenge for you.
It is, and I think as you lead on a wider canvas, as it were, and certainly being a bishop, a lot of what you do is quite public, so people can see that and see what you're up to. So there's always the need to sort of check your motivations and stay focused on God and say, am I doing the right things? I think that's why it's really important that we are, that we always lead in community, you know, that we've got other people to watch us, to speak into our lives, to be accountable to. So I, in the book, I do encourage people to find mentors and people who can walk alongside them to really reflect with them on some of this stuff.
Sure. And, I mean, talking more broadly, there's hints within the book, of course, of your previous work as principal of Trinity College in Bristol.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm just wondering how that, how becoming the Bishop of Penrith, back into, if you like, more cold face style ministry, how you reflect upon your time as principal and what you were doing there, and in the kind of work of training people into Christian ministry.
Yeah, it's really interesting. As you say, sort of now I'm going around to lots of different churches and visiting them and encouraging them and seeing what they're doing on the ground. And so it's kind of the other side of the fence, really, from the training thing. And I think, above all, you know, what both being at Trinity and being a bishop, what it really gives me is great hope, actually, in the church and in what God is doing on the ground. You know, there's some brilliant things going on in the Diocese of Carlisle in Cumbria, where I am. People really trying to do creative things to reach people for the gospel. And at Trinity, I saw people being trained really well for that. So I think it's about developing the right kind of character. You know, how do we not just teach people in our colleges how to do things, although that's important, you know, how to preach a good sermon and how to do a funeral, but also how do we develop those character traits that are the ones that are in line with Jesus and the Holy Spirit that help us to go out and do stuff on the ground. So two sides of a coin, really. It's fascinating going from one to another, and both brilliant environments to work in.
Yeah, and certainly Trinity, certainly in your day, was very aware that it's both an academic learning, but it's also a formation of a person into, you know, to increasing likeness of Christ, which of course is the role of all Christians, but particularly Christian leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. And doing that in community, as you say, that was the great value at Trinity, that people were together eating, worshipping, learning, laughing, weeping, you know, all of those things that that mean we form each other in the likeness of Christ. So, yeah, it's a great place to be. Yeah.
You talking more broadly, we talked about, you know, a little bit about what you hope for the book, but have you got other things that you'd want to say about what you hope the book will do in terms of the sort of its role within our thinking about leadership?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose one of the things I hope it might do, one of the things I wanted to do, is just speak into this whole culture that you mentioned about counting stuff in the church. You know, I think we are quite ambitious as a church these days. We're putting money into projects. We're wanting to see how successful they are. And so there's lots of counting that goes on. I mean, you know, name a church meeting that anyone went to recently where there wasn't a graph in it somewhere.
Yes,
you know, we're kind of obsessed with looking at things going up and down and numbers. And so I think I just wanted to speak into that context and say, that's great. You know, we do need to count things. We do need to measure things. But how do we make sure that we're measuring the right things? How do we make sure that we're valuing what God values? How do we make sure that we're seeing growth in the right way? So if the book just helps us as a church to think through some of those issues a bit more deeply, then I'd be really delighted about that. And I hope it might be a book that will just encourage Christian leaders, not just in the church, but in other spheres as well, you know, day-to-day life and leadership. And just maybe lift off some of the burdens that we feel as leaders and just give people freedom to think, oh, yeah, I feel like that too. I'm not alone in thinking like that. How can I look at that with the lens of faith? How can I see my ambitions through the lens of faith? How can I live well as a leader? And I really hope that, I mean, when I was writing the book, I tried to write with a bit of humour. I tried to be quite honest about some of my own struggles and failings. So I really hope that people will enjoy reading it. You know, I hope it's not too heavy a read, so I hope people will enjoy reading it.
No, you have lots of humour, and often in brackets. So just spot
yes, little
sides, which were thrilling. So yeah, I enjoyed it enormously. I'm not just saying that because I had to read it for the sake of this.
That's very kind.
So how? I mean, good. So listeners could get a copy, obviously, where they get Christian books. It's published by SBCK.
It is, yeah. Ambition, what Jesus said about power, success and counting stuff, SPCK. Yeah, I definitely go to your local independent Christian bookseller and ask them to order some copies in. It's available from the SPCK website at the moment with 20% off, so it's just $7.99 at the moment. And, yeah, it would make a great Christmas present for all the leaders in your life, so do go out and buy them.
Absolutely. So that's so well, thank you so much for sparing the time to talk about this and for writing the book. So much appreciate.
Well, thank you, Andy. Thanks very much. It's been lovely talking to you.
So that's Emma Einstein, the Bishop of Penrith, and the book again is Ambition, What Jesus Said About Power, Success and Counting Stuff. And if you're wondering about the spelling, Einstein is I-N-E-S-O-N, pronounced Einstein. And this is Andy Peck. Thanking you for joining us. Do check out the podcast online on Premier Radio, iTunes or Podbean. And the words of the Apostle Paul as we close, and God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, Having all that you need, you will abound in every good work.
It was great to rebroadcast that show from 2019 with the Reverend Dr. Emma Einson, then Bishop of Penrith, now Bishop of Kensington. I see that the book we were discussing is still available, though slightly more expensive, at £9 and a penny in paperback and £6.99 on Kindle. Listening back to the show, there were a number of things that struck me. The way in which the New Testament encouraged us to a different style of leadership. Jesus, of course, told his followers, "Not so with you." And Emma talked about the "not so with you" style of leadership. And it's tempting, of course, when other leadership styles seem to work, the bullying and the domineering and the manipulative. But actually, we're to serve others. We're to be compassionate to others. We're to serve in the manner of Jesus, who did not seek to be served, but gave his life as a ransom for many. So this is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.